Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
It does not take a majority to prevail, said Samuel Adams back in 1770-something, but rather an irate, tireless minority keen on setting brush fires of freedom in the minds of men. Our quote for the day, welcome, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Terry Jeffrey is going to drop by in our second hour. We're going to be talking about big government. Yes, I am going to clearly and explicitly say I am a fan of big government. Huh, interesting. That should be entertaining. Everything You Know Is Wrong, Max Gross is going to drop by in our third hour, from schlub to stud, how to embrace your inner mensch and conquer the big city. Larry Scott from VA Watchdog will be with us at the end of the day. After I get off the air tomorrow, I'll be hopping on a plane to Madison, Wisconsin, where we'll be at the Nonstop Radio Symposium, nonstopradio.com. I'll be speaking Saturday there. We'll be doing our show Friday from the Mike 92.1, our affiliate in Madison, Wisconsin. So, lots going on. Okay, our question for this hour. Will we all be living in yurts, eating roadkill, as a consequence of Reaganomics? 30 years of Reaganomics, and what brought this to mind was, I believe it was last night, or the night before last, whenever it was. I DVR these things. I'm not sure when it was played on The Daily Show. But The Daily Show did this segment where they went out and they interviewed this guy named Todd Kershaw, who's living in a yurt and living an absolute carbon-free lifestyle, which means that he has to scavenge for his food.
What about heating and cooking without oil? Not a problem for this one-man blue state.
Right here we have some, these are wild greens from the forest, just right around here. That's dessert.
Right.
And these came from a dumpster.
And when you say dumpsters, you don't mean a high-end quality food chain called Dumpsters?
No.
No.
That's not what I mean.
No, he certainly did not.
My favorite dumpster is Trader Joe's. It's just so wonderful. It's the nirvana of dumpsters. There's great food. A lot of it's organic, and there's very rarely do you find maggots in there. This is good food.
Mm.
That over there is roadkill.
Roadkill?
Yeah, yeah. What do you think?
Mmm, it's really tender.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it would be, because it was slammed into the ground by a truck.
And as funny as it is, I mean, this long-term unemployment in the U.S. now, and Todd Kershaw, by the way, the guy's an engineer, and he's living, you know, well, whatever. Anyhow, long-term unemployment in the U.S. climbs 37% in 1 year. Number of people out of work for more than 6 months has shot up 37% since last year, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics. There are now, last month, 1.5 million people had been unable to find work for more than a half a year. The U.S. economy shed 62,000 jobs in June, on top of 62,000 in May. This is the sixth straight month of falling payrolls. We've lost 438,000 jobs since the beginning of the year, and at the same time, we're creating a lot of jobs with the war in Iraq. We're still, you know, contractors and everything. It's amazing. Yesterday, I got a haircut, and the woman cutting my hair was telling me how her brother is in the Marine Corps, and he gets out. He's been in for 8 years, actually, and he just left Iraq a while ago, and he's in Korea right now, and he's getting out in a couple of months. And he's got a job offer, $180,000 a year as a private contractor to go back to Iraq. And he's having a debate with his mom about it. So we're creating jobs, we're bringing money back into the country, but even a war isn't enough to create jobs when you've got 30 years of Reaganomics. Total number of unemployed in the United States, 8.5 million. A year ago, only 7 million unemployed Americans. And these, by the way, these figures do not take into account the 1.5 million to 1.6 million people who are, quote, marginally attached to the workforce, end quote, which means that they have looked for work in the previous 12 months but didn't find any and so didn't look in the last month. Excuse me. And also this figure includes approximately 420,000 discouraged workers who have given up looking for work because, in their opinion, there is simply none out there. All the while, ever since George Bush became, actually, ever since Ronald Reagan became president, real wages have continued to plummet. When you look at the way, if you look at wage earners, people who are paying Social Security taxes, not people who are making their living on dividends and interest. You look at the real wages of wage earners and you adjust it for inflation. Ever since Reagan became president, they have been steadily disintegrating. The big story in the financial press, well, there's a couple, but the two big stories of the financial press, and this all ties into this stuff, is number one, this housing bailout thing. There is a subtext to this that I think most people don't have any clue about. You know, why, you know, Bush signed this bill today or yesterday afternoon, or maybe it was this morning, in private. He didn't have a public ceremony for signing this bill. Why all the subterfuge? Well, it turns out that back in the 70s, as things were already starting, you know, they were getting a little dicey here with the dollar. And it, I mean, it really started moving in this direction in the 80s, big time. But even back in the late 70s, Arthur Burns, the Fed chairman, was talking to the Japanese. The Japanese were saying, you know, okay, we've got all your dollars from all the stuff you're buying from us. And we're going to recycle these into what's called the euro dollar market. In other words, the Japanese were going to use those dollars to buy European-made goods and to trade with Europe. And Burns was concerned that that would cause us to lose control of our currency. So he said, if you'll give those dollars to the Fed, if you'll give them to us, we will put them in secure investments that will give you a predictable rate of return and there's no risk. And so the Japanese did that. They cut this deal. Their central bank and our central bank essentially cut a deal with each other. And these are both privately owned banks, by the way, but of these two nations. And since the 80s, and in particular since the 90s, the Fed has been putting, as the housing bubble really started to explode in the mid-90s, the Fed has been putting this money, which is now not just from Japan, but it's also from China and Saudi Arabia and a couple other countries, where we're giving them enormous amounts of money, and in exchange they're giving us stuff. Saudis are giving us oil, the Japanese and the Chinese are giving us toys, stuff, you know. But we're giving them dollars. And so they've been giving the dollars back to us, and the Fed has been investing them, or our government has been investing, the Fed has been investing them in mortgage-based securities. Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae bonds. And that's why the bailout had to happen. Because otherwise, it's not that you or I would get screwed. It's not that people who own homes would get screwed. I mean, they threw a bone to them. They're just throwing a bone to people in this housing bailout bill. The real bailout is the Chinese, the Japanese, the Saudis. Don't worry, your bonds are going to be safe. You're going to get your money back. We're not going to let Fannie and Freddie go. And that's what this is all about. Now, at the same time, huge stories in the front page of the Financial Times. And this, again, this, you know, this is the bread and butter stuff. This is whether or not America is going to survive as a functioning democracy, or whether we're going to be completely taken over by transnational corporations. And I say completely because we're already largely there. The big headline, front page story, complete with a big picture of Susan Schwab, the U.S. trade representative. Doha talks fail after impasse on farms. You say, well, what's the big deal of Doha talk, trade talk rounds? Well, the bottom line here is what caused this to collapse. The article, negotiators shift the debris for signs of hope. China broke cover on Monday, publicly accusing the U.S. of hypocrisy in heavily subsidizing its own cotton farmers while asking other countries to expose theirs to harsh competition. This is how it works. We say, and China, by the way, is doing the same thing. They're doing it with manufactured goods. They have high import tariffs on manufactured goods. They don't let them into the country to compete with their manufacturers. And they want everybody else in the world to drop their tariffs. We say to undeveloped countries, to countries that are mostly agricultural, We say, you've got to buy our stuff. You've got to buy our cotton. You've got to buy our finished goods or whatever. And you can't protect your own markets. But we're going to protect our markets where we think it's important. And the Chinese are protecting their markets where they think it's important. Which, by the way, is what countries should do, except that, you know, individual countries. But what we've done is we've set up a situation where smaller countries can't do it. Only the big countries can do it. That's what the whole WTO thing is all about. It's all about a handful of very large companies or countries, by and large, operating to the benefit of probably about 200 multinational corporations say, we're going to protect ourselves and we're going to make sure that the small countries essentially remain colonies of the big countries. And what's so ironic about this is that in the last 15 years or so, we, the United States, have been targeted by the Chinese, by and large, for this. And now we're losing all our jobs. We're losing manufacturing jobs. We have this huge trade deficit because we bought into this thing thinking it was going to give us dominance, and now it's destroying us. Thanks to Ronald Reagan. 16 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Let's make this frame even a little bit bigger. Here you got the Chinese blowing up these trade talks, these WTO trade talks, because basically they want to make sure that their food supply is safe. We never blew up the trade talks by saying we want to make sure that our jobs are safe. Never did it. All along we've been saying our food supply is, we got that under control. It wasn't a concern for us. And apparently, at least since Ronald Reagan came into office, our jobs have not been a concern for us. So now let's add another piece to the... So here we've got the destruction of the American middle class, the freaking out of the American middle class. John McCain is going to absolutely exploit this. He has, as Carl Wolfson brilliantly pointed out on our morning show here on KPOJ, John McCain has three core messages. And his campaign is going to be three two-word messages. And it already is. Win Iraq, drill oil, lower taxes. And he's just going to repeat those three things 100 different ways between now and November. And if Obama doesn't come up with his three sentences, he's going to be in big trouble. So here we have, I mean, Dennis Kucinich, for example, you know, he got, what, a couple hundred thousand, I believe, signatures on the petition to impeach Bush. Newt Gingrich comes out with his drill here, drill now, pay less campaign. And he already got over 1 million signatures on his petition. I mean, it's been like a week and a half, over 1 million signatures of Americans on this petition. It is absolutely disingenuous. It is absolutely filled with lies. I mean, even if we said, okay, you can drill anywhere you want, and they found places to drill, it would take at least 10 years before they even started. According to the federal government, this is going to make no impact. But it's such a tempting soundbite. And this goes into number two of McCain's strategy. McCain's strategy, win Iraq, drill oil, lower taxes. And actually two and three. So Gingrich has rolled this program out. Drill here, drill now, pay less. Obama needs to have a similar campaign. And I think it should be called Stop the Addiction, Rebuild a New America. Stop the addiction to oil. Let's build a solar wind-powered America. You got use T. Boone Pickens for this thing, the guy who funded the original Swift boats. But It's going to require playing politics with that. It's just it ain't happening. Meanwhile, in Mexico, here you got Felipe Calderon, the Mexican president who stole the last election, the conservative, and he has now cut a deal with Halliburton, and he's trying to privatize the Mexican oil supply. In Mexico, in 1938, the government took control of all the oil in Mexico, and they wrote it into their constitution that it was illegal to privatize any part of the oil sector, because the oil in Mexico is the property of the people, and so all the revenue from it has to be to the benefit of the people. Well, Calderon wants to change that like a good conservative. He wants to say that the oil in Mexico is the property of Halliburton or ExxonMobil or Chevron or Shell or BP or whoever he can sell it to. And his Manuel Lopez Obrador, who ran against him and lost to him in this, what many feel was a rigged election, this last election, is spearheading a movement down in Mexico to stop this privatization. But this is just one example of it. Meanwhile, in the United States, we have, and this is where it gets very strange. In the United States, you've got the governor of New York, of the state of New York, Governor Patterson, yesterday called an emergency session in the state legislature. He's saying, we're broke. We're going to have to sell off bridges, roads, and tunnels because we got this huge budget deficit. In other words, the old joke. Want to buy the Brooklyn Bridge? May well become a reality. 30 years of Reaganomics. So hollowed out our infrastructure core to the point the bridges are collapsing in Minnesota. 30 years of Reaganomics destroying this country. And New York is going to have to sell the Brooklyn Bridge. They're going to have to sell the Lincoln Tunnel. And who are they going to sell it to? Well, if they're following the pattern of Indiana and Illinois and a few other states, they're going to have to sell it to the Spanish or the Australians, because no Americans have that kind of money anymore. And once they've sold it to them, all the revenue that is produced by those by the strategic infrastructure, which is absolutely necessary. This is the commons of the United States. All the revenue that's produced by that, where's that money going to go? It's going to go outside the country. We 30 years of Reaganomics has turned us into a third world country. We used to be the biggest creditor in the world. We are now the biggest debtor in the world. We used to be the biggest manufacturer in the world. Now we're the biggest importer of manufactured goods in the world. Our main exports to China are our recycled waste paper and scrap and raw wood. And their 98% of their exports to us are finished manufactured goods. Over 3 million American jobs just in the last 7 years have gone to China. 3 million American jobs. Will we all be living in yurts, eating roadkill, because that's all we can afford?
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-303-2270.
There's a dark and a troubled side of life. There's a bright and a sunny side too. Though we meet with the darkness and strife, the sunny side we also may view.
Keep on the sunny side, always on the sunny side.
Knowing for sure that America is going to be restored to American values. We are moving in the right direction, my friends. We just have to get a little more strategic about it. Our Higgins alert
meow,
for the
meow,
day.
Meow, 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 meow.
Oh, man. We've, you know, Higgins is a rather large yellow tabby, especially when he leaps on you. Well, it's not every day somebody loses a 44-pound cat. The owner has until Saturday to reclaim her kitty before it's eligible for adoption. This is in Voorhees, I don't see what state it is. Oh, New Jersey. And officials at the Camden County Animal Shelter are calling her Princess Chunk. Yeah, well, thank goodness Louise can't fit this cat under the seat of an airplane, or she'd be out there trying to adopt it. And also in other cat news, a kitten is being called a holy cat. In Goshen, Indiana, the Johnson family rescued two kittens after their mother abandoned them outside their house, and one of the kittens has Jesus in its fur. And that you can see the photo on the internets. Very entertaining. Our meow, our Higgins alert for the day, 866-303-2270, our telephone number. And, by the way, I also wanted to share with you this little gem. This, the Inspector General, the Inspector General of the Department of Justice found that Monica Goodling, as you heard, you know, yesterday and the day before, New York Times and whatnot, that Monica Goodling had broken the law. So Glenn Fine, Inspector General Glenn Fine, I kept saying, you know, I didn't see anything in the newspapers. The newspapers weren't asking the question, is somebody going to jail? The Democrats weren't asking the question. It took a Republican, Arlen Specter. Here's Arlen Specter asking the Inspector General of the Department of Justice, the guy who works for Mukasey, whether they were going to try to send Monica Goodling and Kyle Sampson to jail.
Did the conduct of Monica Goodling or Kyle Sampson or John Nowacki in politicizing the appointments of people like immigration judges or members of the Board of Immigration Appeals, did that constitute a violation of criminal law?
I don't believe it did, Senator Specter. I believe it violated constitution of department policy and federal civil service law, which is civil law, but not criminal law. It's not a criminal statute.
So then Specter says, well, what about when they lied to us? Isn't that against the law?
Was there anything in your investigation to suggest that there's a basis for criminal prosecutions for making false official statements?
We looked at that carefully. In our judgment, in the judgment of prosecutors, experienced prosecutors who worked on this case for us, we did not think that there was a sufficient basis for a criminal prosecution for false statements for anyone. We also noted we don't think that Monica Goodling made false statements to Congress, but we also noted she has immunity, and sort of the use of any testimony or the fruits of any testimony would be prohibited. But having said that, I will say that we do not believe that the conduct that we found in our report constitute a criminal violation. It was a violation of civil law and department policy.
In other words, naughty, naughty, you got away with it. Good, 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 good. And we've got all those good Republicans in judicial offices. It's incredible. 866-303-2270, our telephone number. And Henry in Stevensville, Montana, listening on KMPT. Hey, Henry, what's up?
Hey, good morning, Tom. I'd like you to back up to your earlier segment about the whole housing debacle and how it ties in with foreign investment.
It's all part of the same thing.
I didn't follow the beginning part of that about how we owed money to them and they paid. I didn't follow that.
It's pretty simple. This year we will buy $800 billion worth of stuff from the rest of the world, more than they buy from us. So right. they're ending up with $800 billion. It's not an even trade, right? I mean, if they bought $800 billion worth of, say, General Motors cars from us, and we bought $800 billion worth of, say, computers from China and oil from Saudi Arabia, then $800 billion would come and go, and there'd be no money left over anywhere, right? And they'd end up with General Motors cars, and we'd end up with oil and computers.
Right.
But the fact of the matter is, we're buying $800 billion worth of stuff from them that they're not buying from us because we don't make anything here anymore. And so as a result of that, they've got this $800 billion, a surplus, as a result of the trade surplus, sitting in their banks. And they're trying to figure out, what do we do with this money? And we cut a deal with them about 20 years ago saying, you know, if you will put that money back into our country, if you'll buy our treasury bonds and our federal securities with that money, see, that allows us then to borrow. That's how the government funds not its trade deficit, but its... the actual debt. What Bush announced yesterday is going to be, you know, $500 billion. It's actually going to be $600 or $700 billion, maybe $1 trillion. That's how we borrow the money for that. Is we go to the Chinese and say, you know, that $800 billion we gave you in exchange for all those computers, would you please loan that to us so that we can tell people that their taxes are low? And when they loaned that money to us, we gave them in exchange bonds, you know, debt instruments, IOUs, for Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. And so now, as Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac are looking insolvent, if we say to them, sorry, guys, we're just going to let them fall through the cracks and go bankrupt because, you know, the whole thing was corrupted, then those countries will stop giving us money, and we will be standing on the outside looking in, shall I say it, without... Does that make sense, Henry?
That makes a lot of sense. And on another note, I just want to say that my wife calls often and has never gotten through, and this is the first time I called.
And you got through.
So, well, another one of Murphy's Laws coming.
There you go. Henry, thanks a lot for the call, and best wishes to your wife in future calls. Linda in Cleveland, Ohio. Hey, Linda, what's on your mind today?
Yes, good morning, Tom. I have a couple of points, and if we have time, I'll say something about McCain. The first point is that Bush is only right about one thing in his whole 7.5 years, and that is that the U.S. is addicted to oil. And
you notice so, he only said that once.
Yeah. So more drilling is like giving free booze to an alcoholic.
And yeah, that's why I think that the Democratic slogan should be end the addiction, build a new America. That should be their slogan. Because
yes,
this you know, drill now, drill here, buy cheap or pay less, that mantra is so effective. And Newt Gingrich is riding that thing just as far as he can.
Yes, and it's such a lie.
Oh, it is. It absolutely is. And you know, stop the addiction, build a new America has the benefit of being honest. You know, it's factual. There's integrity to it. You know, plus it'll create jobs and all kinds of things. Linda, thank you for the call. Frank in Los Angeles, listening to K-Talk. Hey, Frank.
How are you doing? You know, several things here. Now, we're paying our taxes to build infrastructure, and we pay taxes to maintain them, and now they're trying to sell the infrastructure to the private sector, and then we're going to have to pay to use those.
Absolutely. And when we bought that infrastructure, when it was actually, most of it was taken, you know, through eminent domain, most of the property was taken from private people, you know, for the highways and the roads and the bridges and things. It was at pennies against the dollar today. And you know, I mean, how do you value this stuff? But even more importantly, this is our strategic infrastructure. You can't run a country if you don't own your own roads. China is not selling their roads off to American companies. They would not tolerate it. Germany is not selling their roads off to American billionaires. They would not tolerate it. Wouldn't put up with it for a moment. Greg in Portland. Hey, Greg, what's up?
Hey, first-time caller. You know, I'm from Detroit, Michigan, and I live in Portland now.
Mm-hmm.
My grandma was just telling me that they're selling the tunnel to Canada to make up for a budget shortfall.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah. Isn't that wonderful?
This is where we're at, Greg, and it's just we started going down this insane privatization road. As I said, Calderon is doing this with the oil business down in Mexico, and in part, it's not because, you know, we're desperate for cash that we're doing it. This is a planned move. Grover Norquist announced this back in 2002, although it had been in place for 20 years and had been working for 20 years. This is you know, Reaganomics on steroids.
I've always felt the 9 most terrifying words in the English language are, I'm from the government and I'm here to help.
And Grover Norquist, talking with Mara Liasson, and I think it was May of 2002, said, we don't want to eliminate government in the United States. We simply want to shrink it down to the size where it's small enough that we can drag it into the bathtub and drown it. And so what they have done is they have cut off the funds to government, run up such a huge debt that governments now all across this country have no choice but to sell off the commons. And then who are they selling it off to? Grover Norquist's billionaire buddies. Or the multimillionaires like Grover Norquist who work as lobbyists like Ralph Reed did for overseas billionaire buddies. David in Corvallis. Hey, David, got a minute before the break here. What's up?
Yeah, I heard Peter DeFazio this morning when he said to the effect that, and I couldn't agree with him more, that we can't continue to sell our jobs to China so that they can then buy our debt, that they'll lend us money to buy things that we
don't make. Yeah, that's what we're doing. I mean, you look
absolutely.
Most recent report from the Economic Policy Institute, U.S. has lost to China 2.3 million jobs since 2001. And then you look by state. California lost 325,800 jobs. Texas lost 202,900 jobs. New York lost 127,000 jobs. Illinois, 102,000 jobs. Ohio, 102,000 jobs. This just since 2001, just to China. Florida, 100,900 jobs. Pennsylvania, 85,100. North Carolina, 79,000. I'm on the air in every single one of these states. Michigan, 79,500. Georgia, 73,600. Just to China, just since Bush became president. And this is a process that has actually been going on since Reagan became president. Just in the last year alone, California lost 55,400 jobs to China because of these absolutely insane trade policies. And what's the solution? Well, let's sell the Brooklyn Bridge.
Watch live video of the Tom Hartman Program at HartmanRadio.com.
Behind the good old working-class stainless steel microphone, Tom Hartman Program brought to you in part by the Teamsters, fighting to pass the Employee Free Choice Act. Find out more at Teamsters.org. Keep in mind, this guarantee bill, this bailout bill that George Bush signed in private this morning is unlimited in its bailout of Freddie and Fannie. It could be. In fact, it's some reasonable estimates. It's going to be $800 billion. Dollars. When the printing presses start running to cover that, watch the dollar fall through the floor. And watch oil go to $200 a barrel. And watch gold go to $1,600 an ounce, in my humble opinion. Now, I may well be wrong. I've been wrong before. I'll tell you, back in the 1980s, I think it was, when gold spiked at $800 an ounce, I bought some. But nonetheless, I really think that this is it. I think we've got a really, really tough time ahead of us. Henry in Cincinnati, Ohio. Hey, Henry, what's on your mind today?
Well, the thing that's on my mind is this. I'm listening to John McCain speak. Hey, you know, this guy just don't make any sense. How are you going to sit up there and tell a little girl and tell a group of people that you're not going to raise taxes and things of that nature, but you're supposed to be able to balance the budget, right?
He's not going to raise taxes because he wants to do away with Social Security. He wants to do away with Medicaid. He wants to do away with Medicare. He wants to do away with the Education Department. He wants to do away with, you know, basically, if you shut down most federal programs, particularly the entitlement programs, you don't have to raise taxes.
Well, yeah, but see, the problem with that is this.
You got an entire nation that starts to look like rural India, but you know.
We're going to look worse than that because if you really look at it, you turn around, you got all these people, okay, say retired and things of that nature. There's no Social Security, there's no Medicare coverage to help these people, anything like that. And all of a sudden we're back in the early 1900s where people are dying from chickenpox.
There you go. Yeah.
When is it going to stop? I mean, people really need to get realistic.
It's going to stop, Henry, when we elect more, 60 Democratic senators and a Democrat for president of the United States. And when we start seriously looking, and I don't think, frankly, this is the election to do it in, but I think the next one, in 2 years from now, we need to be very, very seriously looking at these so-called Democrats who are voting with the Republicans all the time.
Right. You know what's hurting me right now more than anything else?
What's
is that?
That
we don't have one Democrat right now standing up with Obama telling these people drilling offshore right now is not going to do us any good whatsoever because it's going to be 5 to 7 years for that oil even hit the market. And even then, oil probably be so high, it wouldn't make a difference anyway.
Yeah, here's the problem, Henry. And Pelosi said that on The Daily Show last night or the night before. I mean, she's out there saying that, and the Democrats are out there saying that. The problem is that it takes more than four words to say it. The Democrats have to boil this down to a friggin' soundbite. Newt Gingrich has got his drill here, drill now, pay less. Everybody can get that. Even though it's a lie, everybody can get that. And the Democrats have to come up with a slogan. My suggestion is stop the addiction, rebuild a new America. I think that it throws it right back in their teeth. Oh, you want to drill? You're an addict. It's like a junkie poking in, you know, for a fresh vein. And anyway. Well, not but anyway. We've got to move in that direction. William in Alaska. Hey, William, what's on your mind?
Hey, I got to tell you guys that the real oil is here. There's more oil in Alaska than anywhere. And it's
entire naval reserve up there, which has got billions of barrels of oil in it, has already been licensed to the oil companies to drill. And they're saying, fine, thank you very much. We'll keep that in our back pocket as an asset on our books, and we'll drill it eventually when we get around to it.
Absolutely, and I've been there, I've seen it. And the other thing is that our congressional delegation is so corrupt up here. It's not just Ted Stevens and these people that are going on in their investigations. Now, half of ours, we've just had a string of people that were put in jail, and they were so bold as to actually call themselves the Corrupt Bastards Club, they had hats and T-shirts made. And this is the environment that we have in this Republican state of Alaska. These people get away with anything.
Right, and this is why your governor yesterday, instead of coming out and condemning what Ted Stevens did, came out and said, oh, this is kind of a sad day, and, you know, I just kind of danced around thing. Because, you know, she's not all that clean herself. I mean, it's just, it is absolutely incredible.
When our governor became Senator Murkowski, when Senator Murkowski became governor, he actually named his daughter to be his replacement in the Senate.
Right.
Talk about nepotism, but they actually got away with it. And our sheeple of a population here actually reelected a completely inexperienced person in this nepotistic move. And I'll tell you, she's not a very good politician, and she's let one huge thing slip, is that she has access to the information that only senators get. And so our fishermen, she is actually letting a small rain of truth come out. And she has been told, as we know, the rising CO2 levels are changing the acidity of the ocean, and they're destroying the phytoplankton.
Yeah.
And this is actually...
And that could destroy the Alaska fishing industry.
Not just the fishing industry. I mean, this is the collapse of the human food chain.
You're right.
And she let it slip because she's not a good politician. She's just somebody's daughter. And she let it slip. And I'm telling people, you guys got to know, Alaska is two summers in a row now. We haven't had summer. I honestly think the Earth has a thermostat, and it's going to be a cold hell because we haven't had a summer in two summers. There's glacier-building snows going on up here that nobody talks about. So I would encourage anybody listening to keep their eye on Alaska. We knew about global warming 20 years ago. We're telling the new story now. And if you want to know the true corruptions of Republicanism, look in Alaska.
There you go. William, very well said. Thank you. And we're seeing the same thing here in Portland, Oregon. We had the La Nina this year, and we didn't have spring. I mean, you know, it just went from winter to summer in about June. Hobart in Fort Worth, Texas. Hey, Hobart.
Hey, man.
What's up?
You there?
I am. You're on the air.
Ah, good. I love what you're saying.
Thank you.
But we have a local guy down here that has nailed down the oil prices. Are you with me?
I'm listening.
All right. ICE, International Commodity Exchange, that's unregulated, given to us by our lovely Phil Graham.
Uh-huh.
And they gave us Enron, gave us the mortgage meltdown.
Right.
If we would open up the international, oil reserve.
Oh, the U.S. oil reserve, right. Yeah, if Bush would do that, and Hobart, I'm sorry, we're out of time, but if Bush would do that, it would reduce the price of oil for a short while. But we've got a much bigger problem than just, you know, solving by the oil reserve. 57 minutes past the hour. Coming up next, Terry Jeffrey with CNSNews.com.
This is Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back to our second hour. Terry Jeffrey on the line with us, editor-in-chief over at CNSNews.com. Hey, Terry, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom, how you doing?
Just fine. You have written an op-ed here recently called How Big Can Government Get? You point out that in 2008, about 30% of our national income is going to be sucked up in taxes. That's inconsistent with my understanding of government's share of GDP. Where'd you come up with that?
That statistic comes from the Tax Foundation. What they're talking about there is they calculate the total national income, and then they take total tax revenue from federal, state, and local government and calculate it as a percentage of total national income, and that's what it came out to, 30.8%. That's according to the Tax Foundation. That's their calculation.
Right. And the Tax Foundation is?
Tax Foundation is a nonpartisan think tank in Washington, D.C. that studies tax issues, and every year comes out with this report they call the Tax Freedom Day Report, where they take that same percentage, 30.8%, and they say they calculate how many days it equals in a year and say, basically, this is how many days Americans work to pay the taxes that fund government every year.
Okay, I'm trying to find the GDP here. I'm on the government website.
Right.
And I thought our GDP was, you know, something in the neighborhood of $10 trillion, and we're running, and the government is, you know, we're spending about $1 trillion. And so that would make it about 10% of GDP. But
Well, actually, if you look at the historical budget tables of the United States, I actually happen to have them downloaded in PDF on my computer. But they're on the OMB website, and I believe, without actually looking it up, the federal government spends about 20% of GDP and takes in about 18.5% of GDP in revenue.
Okay, so here's my point.
Yeah.
If the government, whether the government's 18% or 30% of you know all the revenue that's running around in this country.
Right.
Your article says, you know, this is too much government, it's too big a government, and I don't entirely disagree. We've got a $1 trillion budget. Half of that is going to the Pentagon. A tiny fraction of that is going for housing, a tiny fraction of that is going for education, a tiny fraction that's going for welfare, a tiny fraction that goes to support big business, a fairly large fraction of that goes to support big oil companies and in corporate tax breaks and support for multinational corporations and in governmental institutions that are supporting multinational corporations like the State Department and whatnot that has turned its major function into being basically a trade emissary for our top 500 corporations. I would like to see the government the exact same size it is right now, but let's just cut the size of the Pentagon in half. Why do we have to have a military that is larger than the combined military of every other country in the planet combined?
Well, I would say, Tom, first of all, I'm just looking at the number now. It's $2.9 trillion is the federal government's going to spend this year, so almost $3 trillion. But I would argue that if you look at the Constitution, the defense of the United States through an army and a navy are among the few things the government is doing now that is authorized by the Constitution. Most of the things the federal government is spending money on, the Constitution doesn't give the federal government the authority to spend money on.
Oh, nonsense. The Constitution gives Congress the right to create any agency it wants and spend money in any way it wants.
No, it doesn't. Article 1, Section 8 specifically says in express language what Congress may spend money on. And among those things are an army and a navy. It does not say it can have a Medicare program. It does not say it can have a Social Security program. It does not say it can fund Medicaid. It doesn't say it can have a Department of Housing and Urban Development. You will not find those in the Constitution.
Yeah, no, and because they didn't say, they weren't looking forward and saying, well, here's all the things you can do. But it basically, man, we had this conversation last time, and I had all the documentation, and I don't have it in front of me right now.
Sure.
The Constitution, but the... damn. But I disagree. I just have to say I disagree with you. The Constitution gives Congress, gives the House of Representatives specifically the authority to create agencies within the executive branch and to fund those agencies. And that's what they've done.
Only to perform those functions that the federal government does.
But those functions of the federal government are very vaguely defined. To ensure justice, ensure domestic tranquility, establish justice, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity?
You're talking about a preamble. You're not talking about the specific section, which is Article 1 of the Constitution, which in Section 8 delineates exactly the things the Congress can spend money on. But here, put this in perspective. I said in my column that in 1909, according to the Tax Foundation, the government spent 4.9% of the national income. So no matter what, there's been this massive increase in the amount of income out of the U.S. economy, out of American workers, that the government takes to do things. And the question is whether that's good or bad. You think it's good, I take it.
Yeah, actually, by and large, I do. And the bottom line, you know, whether it's constitutional or not, and again, I'm asserting that it is, and I'll have to get back with you on the basis of my assertion, because I'm not going to spend 10 minutes on
sure.
the air here, you know, reading the Constitution while I'm discussing with you. But certainly the Supreme Court has not disagreed. And they're the final arbiter of what is constitutional right now with any of these agencies. But the bottom line here is that if we the people collectively through our elected representatives decide that we want to protect ourselves against the disaster of, say, ending up with a, as happened to my friend Michael Hutchison, he broke his neck and ended up impoverished and paralyzed, that if we want to protect ourselves from those kind of disasters, if we want to protect literally widows and orphans, if we want to protect people from poverty and old age, and create a program called Social Security, Social Security Insurance Program, National Insurance Program, then we should do that. If we collectively, we the people, say that we want to have a national health care program like every other industrialized country in the world, we should do that.
All right, well, I would say this. First of all, if you're going to be strictly under the Constitution, the federal government would not have that role. Obviously, it's taken on that role. As a conservative, I don't think we're going to eliminate Social Security and Medicare or devolve them to the states. I think they can be reformed. Constitutionally, if you want to do that, you should have done it on the state level. But here's something, Tom, maybe you might agree with me on. If you look at those tax foundation figures, they go back to the beginning of the 20th century, there's an interesting phenomenon. When the United States of America goes to war, the size of government invariably takes a massive jump upward, and it never ratchets back down over the long run.
Right, and this is Eisenhower talked about.
Well, yes, some of this money is going to build up the military establishment, but others of it is going to build up the welfare state and build up other functions of government that people before the war may never have imagined that they'd be involved in paying for or having the federal government run. So there's no doubt that war is good for the state, and we should avoid it at all possible costs. And, you know, we are seeing massive government increase with the wars we are fighting right now. That is not a good thing.
Yeah, well, that's my, you know, let's cut the Pentagon, Terry. I mean, $8 billion was taken in cash dollars over to Iraq, and it vanished. They've got $2 trillion, the Pentagon, now that they can't account for?
Nobody's
holding them to account for it? $2 trillion?
I have no doubt there's all kinds of waste and corruption and fraud in the Pentagon. Whenever you're having that amount of money being spent, and especially by the government, there's no way they're going to control it all and spend it all properly. And there is
so really, I think that really the debate between, let's just lay this out, you know, honestly here. The debate between conservatives and liberals in America right now is the debate between conservatives and liberals in most of the developed world, which is, are we a me society or a we society? Are we going to collectively backstop each other, or are we going to say, hey, Charlie, you're on your own?
Well,
and call that freedom.
I believe in individual liberty, and I believe in families, and I believe in community.
Right. Sean Hannity went off on this rant about, it's all about families. It's all about family values. We don't need the government telling us this, that, the other. And which is just another way of saying you're on your own. You can't pay for that liver transplant for your kid. Tough. You're on your own. Put little cans in the 7-Eleven.
That's right. I mean, no, if you can't pay for it and your family can't pay for it and your community can't pay for it, no, I don't think we ever should have created a federal agency to pay for it. I also believe...
Right, exactly. We're on your own. That's the conservative worldview.
I do not want the federal government having more control of my life than it already has. I don't
pain, if you get sick, is not control.
No, I do not want to be dependent on the government.
So you'd rather be dependent upon United Healthcare and William McGuire, who takes a $1.7 billion paycheck.
I would rather be dependent on myself and my family. And then I'm truly free. And I tell you, you and I have talked about it before, but your friend David Walker says there's that $53 trillion in unfunded liabilities we have, mostly for Medicare and Social Security.
Right, and he also acknowledged that if we simply lifted the cap on FICA, that it would resolve the entire thing, because that $53 trillion is over, you know, basically our lifetime.
His own figures show that we're going to have deficits of 20% if we have the federal of the GNP to pay for this, which means
right, unless we lift the cap,
then you have to take that 20% of GDP into the federal government, which means you have the federal government taking 40% of the national wealth every year.
Right, unless we lift the cap.
So that's what they'd be doing. They'd be taking 40% of the national wealth. Right now they take 20, then they would take 40.
Okay. Terry Jeffrey, CNSnews.com. Thanks, Terry.
Thank you, Tom.
16 minutes past the hour.
This is Tom Hartman.
Like magic, oh, rolling
Well, it seems like Karl Rove has a little magic. My guess is his magic is going to keep him out of jail probably for the rest of his life, certainly through this term of Congress. The House Judiciary Committee this morning voted 20-14 to hold him in contempt of Congress. Now that has to go to the full House for a vote. We don't even know yet if Speaker Pelosi will allow a final vote. And even if the whole House does vote for contempt, as opposed to inherent contempt, it then goes to Michael Mukasey, and we already know what he's going to do. Governor Don Siegelman is on the line with us. He's part of this whole process, and donsiegelman.com, and there's a couple of other websites, Governor, that you recommend.
Tom, the one that I want to recommend right now is Contempt for Rove. Anybody that feels contempt for Rove or feels that Rove should be held in contempt should go to www.contemptforrove.com and send a message to Congress that they have got to stand up to this bully.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a man who, once he was subpoenaed, left the country and then slid written answers under the door of the Judiciary Committee.
That he only sent to the Republican member.
Right, but they were unsworn. There was no oath. They were unsigned, and Tom, even then, he didn't tell the truth. In these unsigned, unsworn answers, written answers to the Judiciary Committee, he said that there was no evidence. That is simply a lie. There is a sworn affidavit. There is sworn testimony before the Judiciary Committee that places Karl Rove at the scene of the crime in this case in Alabama. That links him to an abuse of power and misuse of the Department of Justice for political reasons. And Karl Rove needs to be held to answer for that. Furthermore, in these unsigned, unsworn answers, he didn't answer the central allegation of those sworn allegations against him, which was that he and the husband of the U.S. attorney conspired to advance the prosecution against me.
Right. Go ahead.
So anyway, the Karl Rove once again has ducked out on Congress, and what we need to do as people in this country is tell our congressmen that we expect them to hold him to the same standard that we are held to, that the unemployed steelworker, the taxicab driver, the hairdresser would be held to, the waitress. If we did not show up for a subpoena, if we skipped the country, we would be in handcuffs as a flight risk.
Yeah. Absolutely. And Contempt for Rove, contemptforrove.com, the website. And Don Siegelman, of course, donsiegelman.com, I before E. We're talking with Governor Don Siegelman, and former governor of Alabama, and victim of a Karl Rove political vendetta. And are there any other venues, Governor, that could be used to pursue a criminal process or a civil process, for that matter, against Karl Rove?
Well, I think the answer is yes, but one, you know, Congress has to decide whether they're going to exercise their inherent contempt powers or just the contempt, you know, having the matter voted on by the full House and then going to court.
Right.
But at this stage, we've just got to advance the ball through the process, and we've got to hold Congress's feet to the fire and let them know that the American people are tired of this double standard. One standard for the working people of this country and another standard for those who are in power. And we do not need to tolerate that kind of duplicity on the part of Congress. Congress needs to hold Karl Rove to the same standard that every other working American is held to every single day in this country.
Who are the members of Congress? If people are going to call, if they went to callcongress.org and just
picked
up one of the 100 members.
I think first they need to call the Speaker's office now that this matter is in her hands.
Nancy Pelosi's office.
Nancy Pelosi's office, and say we expect this to be put on the calendar. We want it brought up for a vote ASAP.
What are your thoughts on inherent contempt versus because there are already several members of this administration who've been held in contempt of Congress by the entire House. And the consequence of that has been that the attorney general, whose job it is to prosecute contempt citations, has said that he's not going to prosecute them.
Well, Tom, I think for two reasons. I think they should exercise the inherent contempt powers and send the Capitol Hill police out for Karl Rove. The, the first reason is that, the one that you just stated, that the process, is likely to get bogged down in judicial procedure and lead nowhere for a long period of time. The second reason is something I said earlier. Karl Rove has already shown that he's a flight risk. When he was subpoenaed, he didn't show up for the subpoena. He was in a foreign country.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So I think those Here's two the, reasons.
But the, apparently the jail cell in the basement of the Capitol was done away with when they remodeled the Capitol back 20 years ago or so because of this deal in the 1930s that Congress made with the executive branch that the DOJ would execute these warrants. And so Congress may not have any place to put him.
Oh, I believe we could find a place.
Yeah. So Congress can commandeer a jail cell, or they, for that matter, they could retrofit a congressional office, I suppose.
There's
got to be a broom closet there somewhere, right?
There's plenty of places for it.
Okay. Governor Don Siegelman, one of my heroes. DonSiegelman.com, his website, contemptforrove.com. Get over there right now and call Speaker Pelosi's office as well. Governor, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you, Governor.
And keep up the great work. 27 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman Program.
This is Tom Hartman. Call Tom at
8663033 2270. The hour. Yeah, I'm glad the House Judiciary Committee decided to hold Karl Rove in contempt. Now I'd like to see the entire House do it, and let's make it inherent contempt. Let's actually go out and arrest the guy because Mukasey will not do his job. And then let's begin impeachment hearings against Mukasey for not doing his job. 866-303-2270, our telephone number. Ruby in Virginia Beach, Virginia. Hey, Ruby, what's up?
Am I on the air?
You are on the air.
Thank you. This is my first call ever. I hear this and that from George Bush and all his cronies that we're addicted to oil.
Yes.
We're not. We're pimped into it. You change the...
Excellent.
You change the... give us other options and watch how fast we'll change.
Yes. Excellent. Perfect. So, Ruby, thank you so much. Very, very well said. Absolutely. And that's my point. You know, stop the addiction, build a new America, or rebuild a new America. That's, that. You know, let's come up with a slogan to counter Newt Gingrich. I mean, if Gingrich can get 1.5 million signatures, 1.2 million signatures, and we can't even get that many for impeachment, I mean, this has to be something that resonates with the average person. Weldon in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Hey, Weldon.
Hi, Tom. First of all, I just wanted to give a big shout out to all my chat room buddies.
Oh, okay, great. TomHartman.com. Thank
my,
you.
My nickname is No Brain McCain.
Oh, cool. Yeah, I see you in there.
And I wanted to challenge you. I wanted to tag you. You're it today.
Okay.
I want you to lead the charge. Get some constitutional lawyer, something. Get Pelosi impeached. Let's get this thing going.
Yeah, you're not going to impeach Nancy Pelosi because it's going to have to go through her to happen.
I mean, she's on the feud today talking about...
Here's the thing, Weldon. Instead of, you know, what's the word? I was going to say killing, but that's just, you know, real hyperbole. Instead of taking out our elected representatives with whom we disagree, let's bring organized pressure to bear on them to do the right thing. Let's tell Nancy Pelosi, we will be behind you. We will support you. You need to hold these criminals to account.
The only thing is that, I mean, she's going around on The View today and talking about how she doesn't know if Bush has created or committed any crimes.
Yeah, I know.
And basically, there's people like Cindy Sheehan and Dodd out there that want to do something. Let's get them in there.
Yeah, thank you, Weldon. And Dennis Kucinich would be glad. Would be glad to provide Nancy Pelosi with evidence that Bush has committed crimes. And beyond that, impeachment proceedings are not based on proof of crimes. Impeachment hearings are to determine whether or not there is a crime. An impeachment is not a conviction. An impeachment is an indictment. This is like a grand jury getting together and saying, You know, did Ted Stevens actually take money from that oil company in exchange for that house? That's what an impeachment is. It's an inquiry. An impeachment is it is looking into it. Then it goes to the Senate where you have a trial and a conviction. The impeachment in the House of Representatives is not a trial. It doesn't start out with the assumption of guilt. It seeks to determine whether or not there is a crime. But, you know, this is all rhetorical right at this point, because there isn't going to be an impeachment here. But there certainly should be, at the very least, the initiation of the kinds of investigations that will carry over into next session, that will begin to establish whether or not these crimes have been committed and how badly they have been committed. Bill in North Carolina. Hey, Bill.
Don, how are you?
Good. Great, but I'll get better.
I just don't understand why you let Nancy Pelosi off the hook so easily.
Look,
she's not doing.
I am telling everybody to call her right now. What I'm saying is, you're not. If you go to her office and you say we're going to throw you out of office, or if you call for the impeachment of Nancy Pelosi, I mean, it ain't going to happen. But if you call Nancy Pelosi's office and politely and reasonably say, you know, I think you're wrong on this, and
reasonably, these people don't listen. Tom, look, there's got to be a third party set up here. Even if we create a gridlock in Washington,
Bill, that's political suicide. You are prescribing political suicide.
Nothing is better than what these people are doing. Nancy Pelosi is behind Bush on the FISA thing. She refuses to admit, like the previous caller just said, that, you know, he's done anything illegal and deserves to be impeached. I can't believe
it. I know, it's terrible. So let's.
We need people like you to say the truth. You know, you mentioned the $2 trillion that are missing from the Pentagon. But on September 10th of 2001, you know, Rumsfeld went on TV and admitted that $2 trillion is missing, and then the Pentagon gets hit the next day and nobody says anything. Why don't we investigate these people?
Well, I think investigating these people is a fine idea, Bill. And I think that pushing Nancy Pelosi to do the investigations is a fine idea. But if we come across and continue to come across as the lunatic fringe shouting left, then there's going to be no response. There's going to be none. And if you want to create a third party, and I mean, there's actually, you don't have to create it. Ralph, you can talk to Ralph, you know, or go with the Green Party. I mean, there's lots of options, but there are options that are going to be suicidal. You're going to end up with another 4 years of Republicans or another 8 years of Republicans, and it's just, you know, it's circular firing squad time. I am not giving Nancy Pelosi a pass. I am suggesting that every single person who's listening to this program should be calling her office and say, at the very least, this administration has committed crimes or may have committed crimes which should be investigated by the House of Representatives. At the very least, investigated by the House of Representatives. Come on, let's look into this stuff. Arnold in Phoenix, Arizona, listening on KPHX. Hey, Arnold.
Hey, man, how you doing? Listen, I enjoyed your comments with Jeffries, man. It's good to hear you guys can debate and not, you know, not spew a lot of venom and a lot of fangs being shown, but get the basic thing going. I mean, the conservatives, I mean, they always come up this point, cut taxes for the rich, and, I mean, those things been implemented since Bush been in the White House. And look what we have, a recession going on. It's going to go into a depression if somebody doesn't do anything about it. And another thing I want to comment on, Tom, is what this what's going to happen to Karl Rove. The Congress is going to do like my big black Persian cat Ben. When he wants attention, he rolls over in the middle floor for the stomach to be rubbed, you know?
Mm. Okay. It's,
I don't know about you, Mr. Higgins, but mine does that. They roll over.
Yeah.
That's what the Congress is going to do, roll over.
Yeah, tragically, Arnold. Yeah, absolutely. Thanks a lot for the call. Higgins rolls over, you rub his tummy, and he'll take your hand off. So it's, but anyhow, Javon in Chicago. Hey, Javon.
Hey, Tom. How you doing? You had a caller before, Don Siegelman, who was talking about how, you know, he didn't want to family first, all this sort of stuff, like the government shouldn't have to help out with this health care.
Oh, before Don Siegelman, you're talking about Terry Jeffries from CNN.
Right. Well, you know, does he even realize that, you know, it's because of the laws and the laws that we don't have as far as watching our food when it comes into, you know, it's part of the government's fault that a lot of people get sick because of the no regulation.
Well, it is the failure of government, of these government agencies that were put into place back when a lot of people were dying from foodborne illnesses, And you know, Upton Sinclair wrote The Jungle back in 1909 or 1910 or whenever it was, and 1913, I think. And people were dying. And we created these institutions and these agencies and you know, the USDA, the FDA, and so on. And they've been given the mandate to, well, the most recent example is the tagging of food pallets. You know, I mean, right now, if you go into a Walmart and you look at a piece of clothing, that Walmart store, Walmart Incorporated, can tell you every place that piece of clothing stopped from the time it was manufactured in China until the time it was sold to you in that store. They can tell you every place it was, and they can tell you that within probably 20 minutes. And yet, if you go into a food store and you say, where did this tomato come from? They're clueless. And they're clueless because 2 years ago, the food industry got on their high horse and spent a whole pile of money in Congress lobbying to roll back regulations on tracking food. And that's, you know, this isn't so much the failure of government. It is the success of corporatization. Jivan, I got to move along, but Mark in Astoria. Hey, Mark, what's on your mind today?
Oh, just a little levity here. I was thinking maybe Don Siegelman for a special prosecutor in Roe's case. Make that a little.
Yeah, if Obama becomes president, absolutely. Don Siegelman for, yes. Give him Ken Starr's old job. That's what we need to do. Isaac in Seattle. Hey, Isaac.
Hey, Tom. I believe 9/11 was the biggest goal in history. And I just wanted to know, could the repatriation goal happen again in America? I heard your commercial earlier. You're talking about ICM. Several liberals talking about that. Don't you guys feel like you guys are tools of the corporate structure?
Well, I don't know. You'll find the ads for the, you know, for gold on the conservative stations as well. Will the government do what Roosevelt did and say, if you've got gold, you've got to turn it into the government, the repatriation of gold? No, it ain't going to happen. And it's not going to happen in part because we're not in the gold standard anymore, so it doesn't matter. But it's not going to happen. Rick in Tampa, we got just a minute here before the break.
Okay.
You're on the air.
Hey, Tom. Listen, the whole thing with, you know, like every branch of government, like these people in Congress, if they're not going to send out the congressional cops to go and pick up all of these people that were on the administrative staff for being in contempt of a congressional order, which is the subpoena, then the Congress is in contempt of their own administrative procedural guidelines. And so they have to write subpoenas for themselves as well.
Yeah, they have failed in their job. And I think that this is, you know, I just don't get it, how Nancy Pelosi doesn't get it, that the American people want Congress to do their job. And I mean, during the impeachment hearings of Clinton, they look back at that and they say, well, you know, during the impeachment of Clinton, it didn't work out so well. That was for an irrelevancy. We're talking here about the destruction of the Constitution. Anyhow, coming up now, I want to change the subject here for a few minutes and talk about the National Nurse Program and how nurses and the public say it's time for a change. We'll be right back with Kendra Scanlon and Terry Mills.
The Tom Hartman Program. Visit us on the web at hartmanradio.com.
To be the one to say it was no good what we done. I dare a man to say I'm too young, for I'm going to try for the sun.
9.5 minutes before the hour. Terry Mills and Kendra Scanlon are in the studio with us. Terry Mills is MSRN-ANPCNE, nurse educator, Portland Community College, president of the National Nursing Network Organization. And Kendra is the media director, or was formerly the media director of the Oregon Student Nurses Association, is currently a student nurse. And together they authored this piece along with Susan Sullivan, Nurses and the Public Say It Is Time for Change, which was published in Topics in Advanced Practicing Nursing e-journal. Terry and Kendra, welcome.
Thank you so much for having us on today, Tom.
Thank you, Terry.
Thank you, Tom.
Yeah, thank you. And I should say, Kendra is also our oldest child. It's my daughter. So you say, thank you, Dad, I guess. I wanted to get you on. Terry, you wrote a piece for The New York Times that created a small explosion about a year and a half ago, as I recall, maybe 2 years ago, called It's Time for a National Nurse, or words to that effect. We have a Surgeon General in the United States, and you're calling for, well, tell me, what
a
is
national
the national
nurse?
Yeah.
Well, Tom, as you know, we have a really broken sick care system, and we're trying to refocus the nation on health care, and this begins with prevention. And so what our organization, our grassroots organization, is asking for is an Office of the National Nurse to help provide a coordinated system to deliver the message of prevention to every American.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And Kendra, what got you into this?
Well, it's a great movement to empower, to make healthcare better in this nation. And it serves as a great complement to the Surgeon General. I think that at the local level, strengthening existing programs is definitely very important, for instance, with the Medical Reserve Corps and parish nurses. And also, we need to improve health literacy and chronic preventable diseases in this nation. And this movement, this push for a national nurse for strengthening the existing position is really important to me.
It's interesting how nursing is becoming more and more. When people go to the doctor's office, they end up not even seeing a doctor. They see a physician's assistant, or they'll see one of several varieties of nurse. Instead, nurses are taking on really significant roles. It's not the supportive role. It's a primary health care role that it seems quite different to me from 30 years ago. Terry, is my perception accurate?
That's absolutely correct. And really what we're seeing with this grassroots movement is we're seeing nurses stand up for health care in this country. And we know that we're present in all communities. We understand the culture of our community. We also are the most trusted health professionals, and we're used to communicating with our patients in a language that they understand. And so through the Office of the National Nurse, we're asking that this individual inspire and engage other nurses to participate in existing programs in their communities and really push to get the message of prevention out to the country. Right now, the United States ranks number 18 in deaths from preventable conditions. And this is just absolutely not acceptable. Just last week, it was reported that there was a 15% increase in the number of patients who now have type 2 diabetes, a preventable condition.
Right.
We really need to push to get in front of these problems. ChronicDiseaseImpact.com published a research study in October that shows that this country is spending $1.3 trillion on seven of the most chronic conditions, many of which are preventable.
Yeah. So we're talking with Terry Mills and Kendra Scanlon. Terry is the president of the National Nursing Network Organization. The website, by the way, nationalnurse.org. And Kendra co-authored this article with her and has been working with the National Nurse Organization for some time and formerly was the media director there. Where do you go from here? This call... Terry turned you into a national celebrity. I mean, how long ago was it that you wrote the piece for the New York Times? I mean, that was a big deal. Congress got involved.
Yes, this is 3 years ago, and we did have legislation, although it's not what we are exactly asking for now. We've received feedback from many of the national nurse leaders, and we are seeking legislation, hopefully, in the 111th Congress. We have over 50 national and state organizations and leaders in support of the legislation, and we really feel that this could really revolutionize prevention in this country by using our largest workforce segment, the nurse.
Yeah. Kendra, why a national, why not just go with the Surgeon General? Why not just say, hey, the Surgeon General's office needs to be expanded?
Well, the Surgeon General is certainly an effective leader. But the national nurse is currently a half-time position. So what we're looking at is a complement to the Surgeon General. So we want to take that part-time position, make it full-time, and that way the national nurse could focus on preventable diseases like dramatically rising obesity rates. And goodness, with type 2 diabetes, we saw a 25% rise in obesity rates. So...
Mm-hmm.
We want We want the title to provide impetus and recognition to the national nurse so that we can encourage prevention and raise awareness for this national push.
Okay.
And we're really asking to elevate and modernize a position that already exists. We don't want to create a new bureaucracy. We know that we don't have enough money to pay for nursing workforce and nurse educators around the country, which is extremely important. So all we're asking is to just elevate the chief nurse officer of the U.S. Public Health Service and really have Congress just designate that this is the national nurse so that people will pay attention. Just like we had Smokey the Bear for fire prevention in, in preventing forest fires, the national nurse will be the equivalent for prevention.
That's great. Terry Mills and Kendra Scanlon, you can find out more at nationalnurse.org. And Kendra, you are the one who wore a long skirt over to our house last year, and Higgins has not forgiven you.
He's never forgiven me. That cat always comes after me.
I just had to bring that up because I've had listeners who say, you've got a cat who will attack people for wearing a skirt into the house?
Notice, I do not have a long skirt on today.
it's time to wear jeans.
Yes.
Anyhow, it's Kendra Scanlon and Terry Mills, nationalnurse.org. You can get all the information. Thank you both for being with us.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thanks,
Terry.
Thank you. Thanks, Kendra. 57 minutes past the hour. Everything You Know Is Wrong, coming up next.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Is the Tom Hartman Program.
Well, you know, sometimes you know what you know, and sometimes you don't know what you know, and sometimes you don't know what you don't know, and sometimes you don't know what you need to know, and sometimes it's just like the Farsan Theater says, everything you know is wrong.
You know that you're wrong, but you fear you're right. You suspect you're out of sync. You think that you're out of your mind.
Everything you know is wrong.
And is it possible everything you know is wrong about being a schlub? Max Gross is with us. From Schlub to Stud is his new book, How to Embrace Your Inner Mensch and Conquer the Big City. Hey, Max.
Hi, how's it going?
Just great. You broke your foot playing wiffle ball?
I know. It's the saddest thing that I've ever heard of in my life. But
okay, so first of all, what's the difference between a schlub and a geek?
Well, you know, this is a question that I've been asked before, and I think it comes down to whether to tuck or not to tuck. I think a lot of schlubs are, you know, untucked, whereas a lot of geeks and nerds just tend to tuck in, have the pocket protector,
pocket
stuff
protector,
like that.
Yeah, okay. So how does you have a chapter about embracing sports?
Yes.
Okay. So to become a stud?
Yes.
What do I do?
Well, I think, you know, first off, watching sports is very key.
Oh, no. I like baseball and football, actually.
Yeah, no.
Don't make me watch basketball, please.
Well, you know, basketball isn't for everybody, but yes, football, I think, is key.
Yeah.
I think if you could sit on a
That's
couch.
That's the most manly of all the American sports.
Yes, yes. If you can sit on a couch, watch football, and drink beer, you're being kind of studly in a way.
Okay.
In a schlubby way.
The warning signs of schlubness?
I'm sorry?
You said you have the warning signs of being a schlub.
Right.
And those are?
Well, I think that if you've got anything alive in your refrigerator, that's generally a very good sign that you're a schlub.
Yeah, unintentionally alive.
Yes, yes. I once kept a rice pudding in my refrigerator for... Well, it was all sorts of multicolors, and, you know, I was afraid to open that refrigerator for a long time. I think that if there are only, like, three shirts that you actually wear, that's a pretty good sign that you're a schlub.
Uh-oh, I'm in trouble. What are the politics of a schlub?
Well, for me, I'm an old lefto, so I think that liberal is probably a pretty good definition. Although I do have a slight fear sometimes that George W. Bush exhibits some schlub tendencies, but I think he's actually more of a schmuck than a schlub. So.
Yeah, okay, I'll go along with that. Max Gross, his book, From Schlub to Stud, How to Embrace Your Inner Mensch and Conquer the Big City. You got a website for this, Max?
Yeah, it's very easy, from schlubtostud.com. And schlub is just spelled S-C-H-L-U-B. So.
Great. Max, thanks a lot for dropping by today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Sure.
Take care.
Thank you. 866-303-2270, our telephone number. Let's see here. Solomon in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Hey, Solomon. Let's talk about politics. Solomon, you're on the air. Maybe Solomon's not there. Do we have that side of the board up?
Hello.
Yeah, okay. Let's go to Tim in Portland. Hey, Tim.
Hi.
Hey, what's up?
There's a basic fundamental misunderstanding of oil that we seem to be forgetting is that, I mean, well, you don't forget, but we're doing the most efficient thing with it on a massive scale when we should be treating it like it's something that can last forever. We can make some houses out of the stuff, but instead we're just dispersing it into our atmosphere.
Well, one of the problems of making houses out of the stuff is that it has all kinds of toxins in it. But I agree with the larger point, which is that oil can be used as plastics and, you know, to make plastics. There are a lot of things that can be done with oil besides using it as a power source. And, many of those are things that when oil is gone, we're going to really have some problems. I mean, some major
exactly.
problems. And so we, you know, good point, Tim. We should be hanging on to what we have by way of oil for use for these kinds of things. You know, you can make medicines out of it. But, you know, using it for fertilizer, using it for herbicides, pesticides, using it for power, in my opinion, frankly, not the best direction to go. Lou in Fayetteville, is it Alabama or Arkansas?
Arkansas.
That's what I thought. It's,
yeah. I didn't have.
What's up, Lou? I'm great, but I'll get better. What's on your mind?
Yeah. Now? Well, first of all, about oil, you know, anything you can do with oil, you can do with hemp. Hemp's a whole lot easier to use and a whole lot easier to grow, and it doesn't contaminate the environment.
You know, that's an excellent point, Lou. Thank you for reminding me of it.
Okay, but also about Nancy Pelosi going around saying Bush hasn't committed any crimes. I'll go back a little way.
Well, she didn't say that. My understanding, now I didn't see the thing on The View, but I've seen the stories about it. My understanding is that what she said was that she didn't know if he had committed any crimes. And
and
there's a great piece over Democratic Underground about this, you know, Dennis Kucinich calling Nancy Pelosi's office and saying, the speaker would like to know about some crimes. And the person says, well, would you like her voicemail? And he says, because she's not in. Yeah, okay, I'll take her voicemail. And then he gets the message that says, the mailbox is full.
Well, I'm going to go back to the FISA Act. Yeah. It was written in 1978 specifically to prevent the President of the United States from wiretapping citizens for calls in or out of this country.
Right.
And it is a felony. It was a felony punishable
2 years in prison.
10 years in prison.
Oh, 10 years.
For each offense, huh?
Yeah. I thought it was 2 years, but I'll
no,
I'll
not 10 years in
knowledge.
Prison for each offense. And even if it's 2 years, it still makes it a felony. But I understood it was a 10-year sentence. Yeah. And he, by his own admission, violated that law 30 times prior to 9/11. Now, don't tell me that the only reason if he hasn't committed any felonies, it's because these cowards up in the Congress are covering their own complicit butts making crimes that were felonies, not felonies.
I agree. And it's why I was so horrified by this FISA legislation that recently was voted on and signed. And here you got Sam Brownback. I mean, this is where it gets totally bizarre, Lou. Sam Brownback on CNN going off, just, you know, being, you know, semi-hysterical about the fact that the Chinese are bugging the hotel rooms of people who are visiting China, right? You know, I mean, holy cow, the Chinese are bugging hotel rooms when he doesn't get it that in the United States, George Bush can bug your hotel room. And then Wolf Blitzer kind of points that out to him, and he says, well, you know, but they're actually setting up, they're looking into, you know, they're setting up monitoring stations in hotels to listen into people's internet traffic. Well, George Bush can already do that and probably has been. Lou, spot on. So much has gone under this bridge that has not been attended to. I can't believe that if Gingrich was running the Congress and Bill Clinton was the president right now, that Bill Clinton wouldn't be in prison. I mean, you know, this is so much beyond having sex in the White House. This is Marty in San Francisco. Hey, Marty.
Hi, Tom. I've got a comment about the man from Alaska who said that the last two springs they've had no summer.
Yeah.
I saw a tape about 15 years ago called Stopping the Ice Age, and it was produced by a bunch of government climatologists or university climatologists. And beyond the big, they were predicting what was going to happen in the future due to global warming. And one of the predictions they said, beyond bigger tornadoes and large hurricanes, was that the global warming is ultimately going to cause a big ice age.
Yeah.
They said the way the patterns of the atmosphere will change in movement, and we will all be inundated by snow.
Yeah, it's about what's called the global current, the Great Conveyor Belt, is what it's sometimes referred to as, and it actually begins about halfway between Hawaii and Taiwan in the South Pacific, and this is a current that flows around and under the southern tip of Africa, and
right.
then it goes up between the continents, and we experience it here as the Gulf Stream, where it passes the United States, and it flows as surface water, warm surface water, and it comes in because the Pacific's higher than the Atlantic, actually, and warmer and larger. And this current, it's 1,000 times larger than all the rivers on Earth combined. It's a massive amount of water.
Yeah,
and when it gets up near Greenland, it releases all its heat and sinks to the bottom and then goes back around. And it's a 1,000-year circulation, actually.
Yes.
And the concern is that if the atmosphere warms up a little bit more, that the conditions will be such that the Great Conveyor Belt will shut down. And what the Great Conveyor Belt is doing is it's causing Europe not to be in an ice age. It also moderates the weather on the eastern coast of the United States and northern Canada, northeastern Canada.
Well, the oceans healthy. If the great current stops, a lot of life in the oceans will die.
Yes, absolutely. And you know, the entire ecosystems of the ocean will be dramatically altered. And the question is, can we as a species change ourselves fast enough to adapt to that? And you know, not to mention all the other species that are going away. We are destroying life on this planet at a rate that is absolutely mind-boggling.
Did you see the National Geographic special called Earth, a Biography?
No, I haven't. I've heard though that it's excellent, Marty. And thank you for the call. There's the one that they did on the deep oceans is just absolutely tremendous. I'll have to check it out. Coming up next, Larry Scott with VAWatchdog.org. Give us our update for the week on what's going on with Veterans Affairs and the Veterans Administration. And then we'll be getting back to your call at 866-303-2270 and the news of the day. Stick around.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
VAWatchdog.org. Hey, Larry.
How you doing, Tom?
I am just great. The American Veterans Online News Magazine?
Sure, why not?
Hey, it's a great new slogan.
Well, you know, it's really interesting because I was speaking with a reporter from a rather well-known newspaper the other day, and the reporter said, you know what you are? You are the American Veterans Online News Magazine. He said, that's where I come to find out instantly what's going on in the veterans community. He said, I don't have to go searching. I don't have to go hunting. I find out about legislation, rule changes, and stories about veterans. I said, okay, that's me.
And it's all over there at VAWatchdog.org. Larry Scott, tell me, you've got a couple of these stories here that I see. Filner, for example, this Agent Orange Equity Act. What's the deal here?
Well, in 2002, the VA changed their rules about who could get what we call presumptive benefits for exposure to Agent Orange.
Right.
Basically, what the VA said at that time was when they changed the rule was a veteran had to be boots on the ground in Vietnam. If so, they were presumed to have been exposed to Agent Orange.
But there were a lot of people on ships offshore and in airplanes and whatnot who were directly exposed.
What happened is that new rule from the VA cut out those who were on the ships offshore, cut out the people who flew in and through, and also cut out people in nearby countries, Laos, Cambodia, Thailand.
Man.
What happened now is Bob Filner, who is a Democrat from California, who heads the House Committee on Veterans Affairs.
And is generally a good guy, is he not?
And normally a good guy, but I think he's misdirected on this. He said last year that he promised to help all veterans who were exposed to Agent Orange and make sure that they got their benefits. He's introduced this new Agent Orange Equity Act of 2008 to change the rules so that the rules would include the ships offshore, those who flew through, but He left out those in nearby countries, Laos, Cambodia, Thailand, those in other countries where Agent Orange was stored and flown through and actually used, such as Guam. And, not to mention, we have dozens and dozens of verified incidents here in the United States where Agent Orange was tested and used. Filner went halfway. I really think he has to go back and rethink this act to include all veterans who were exposed to Agent Orange anywhere, Tom.
Yeah. And people can presumably let him know. You've got the information on your website.
The veterans are letting him know, believe me.
Yeah. Disabled American Veterans, the DAV, the group that my grandfather was a member of, has uninvited Dick Cheney to Las Vegas because he was, it seems to me that Dick Cheney is just paranoid. His security demands are greater than those of George Bush's.
Yes, they are. And here's what he was demanding. He is scheduled to speak in Las Vegas in early August to the DAV, or was scheduled, I should say, to the Disabled American Veterans. The speech was an early morning speech, 8:30. His demands were that all people who were going to view this address must be in the hall 2 hours prior to the beginning of the speech. That would be 6:30 a.m. The doors would be locked, okay? It would be a security lockdown.
Nobody could get in or go out? If somebody had to go to the bathroom at 6:30 in the morning, they'd have to wait for 3 hours?
That's exactly the point. And no one could leave the room until after the vice president has left the building, if I can use that phrase. So you're talking about probably 3 hours or more where you have a room with a few thousand disabled veterans, some with prosthetics, some with other medical problems, who would have been locked in a room and couldn't move. Totally ridiculous, totally absurd. Now, Cheney people are trying to back off and say, oh, no, 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 this is only a suggestion. But the DAV jumped right back in and said, wait a minute, this is the same thing you pulled on us at our convention 2 years ago. We ran into incredible problems. We're not going to do it again. And they uninvited Dick Cheney. He's not going to speak to the DAV convention. They are calling his security measures draconian, unreasonable, and quite frankly, they are. You've got a bunch of old veterans, true patriots, want to hear the vice president, and you're going to lock them in a room for 3 hours? Doesn't make sense.
Yeah, absolutely, Larry. What are some of the other stories on your website that you consider to be the top priorities for our listeners to know about?
Well, one of the things that we at VA Watchdog have been working on for a long, long time is to get the VA to notify all veterans of their benefits. Now, it was congressionally mandated here recently that veterans coming out of Iraq and Afghanistan have been notified of their benefits, not only by mailings, but by a phone call-out center. This is the politicians are, you know, again, it's an election year, that we're taking care of our troops, we're taking care of our veterans. Right. But remember, those veterans are less than 3% of the veteran population. We're finding out every day that the other 97% don't know about their benefits. And there's a story here about a World War II veteran who came back. He was a prisoner of war. The military fixed his teeth, gave him a $160 check, and never had any contact with him, and neither did the VA, for over 60 years. He died never knowing that he had full health care benefits because he'd been a prisoner of war. He may have even had some compensation coming due to disabilities. And it's just a really sad story that points up the fact the VA is not doing its job. Now, right now, the VA is not required by law to inform any veteran of their benefits, except for the veterans coming out of Iraq and Afghanistan. So you have millions and millions of veterans, spouses, dependents, widows, who have had benefits coming, who don't know about it, and we're pushing for total outreach.
Yeah, that sounds like a great plan. Larry Scott, VAWatchdog.org, the website. Thanks, Larry.
Thank you, Tom.
Thanks for the great work you're doing. It is appreciated. Tom Hartman here with you, 27 minutes past the hour, number 866-303-2270. Drop into our live chat room at TomHartman.com. You can see our webcam over at AirAmerica.com. Stick around. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-303-2270.
Getting it ain't hard. You just sign along the dotted line. You can take it home today. buddy, let me tell you, you're gonna pay and pay and pay. Oh, MasterCard, you mastered me. I'll still be paying when I'm 83.
34 minutes past the hour.
Are broke for
God. All right, crazy stuff going on out there. I'm telling you, Jeff Sessions. This is the Republican. Republican from Texas. He's the guy who condemned Janet Jackson and Justin Timberlake. And he said that their little halftime show was an example of liberal values. Well, he just did a fundraiser at a strip club in Las Vegas. And when it was pointed out to him that the 40 Deuce is a strip club, he said, no, it's a burlesque club. I'm holding up a picture from the club from their website. For those of you on Tom Cam or Tom Vision watching over at Air America's website, you can figure out for yourself. Yeah. So, yes, Jeff Sessions' family values, very strange. 866-303-2270. David in Miami, Florida, listening on Wins. Hey, David, what's up?
Yeah, Tom, I was going to give you an argument to that guy that was talking about the difference between the conservative and liberal viewpoint, so-called. You would spread the risk over the greatest pool of people, and you can do that with a nation better than you can with a state.
Absolutely. That's my point, is that Social Security and Medicare are really insurance programs, and the whole concept of insurance is distributing the risk over a broad, broad base, so the cost is reduced to a very small amount, and the individual risk is very small. And you do that with things where there's risks. You don't necessarily do that with things where there's wants. I don't want the government saying that I'm guaranteed a right to a television set. I don't want the government, you know, saying that I'm guaranteed the right to the newest pair of Nikes or whatever. But when it comes to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, certainly life, I think health care falls into that category.
Right. And the general welfare, that's explicit in the Constitution. So
yes.
You can't disagree
yes.
with that.
Yep. Well said, David. Thank you very much. And spot on. Leonard in San Francisco. Hey, Leonard.
How are you doing, Tom?
Just fine. What's up?
I just wanted to ask a question about our commitments from Obama and McCain to our sending troops to Afghanistan.
Mm-hmm.
Both have said they're going to send two brigades over. I forget, it's about 10,000 soldiers. And I have a question about why are we picking that number? Why are we picking a smaller number or a larger number?
Right.
You know, what is our
mission? I think, frankly, Leonard, and I really hope that once all the election is over. I mean, I haven't gone off on this in major rant mode just because we're in an election season, but I really hope once the election's over, and if Barack Obama is elected president, or for that matter, John McCain, I don't care. You know, I mean, I do care, obviously, who's president, but the U.S. policy, in my opinion, needs to be that we are not going to create any more terrorists. And when you run wars, I mean, this book, Three Cups of Tea, is just absolutely brilliant. Nick Kristof wrote a piece about it, an op-ed piece about it in the New York Times a couple of weeks ago, and I since got the book and have started it. And, you know, this guy was in a village in Pakistan. He was injured on a climb and of the Himalayas. And to pay back the villagers who nursed him back to health, he is building schools, and he's built over 20 schools in Pakistan. And in that region where he was building the schools, there was a lot of Taliban. And what's happening now is the people who are members of the Taliban, now that the schools are there and their kids are getting educated, particularly the girls, now that they're getting educated and empowered, the people are saying, you know, we really don't want this fundamentalist nonsense. We really don't want the Taliban here. And in fact, several of his teachers now are former Taliban members who have renounced it. The local community, the mothers are saying they won't let their kids go into it. This is how you have to win people's hearts. You can't just cause them to fear you. And just down the road from where he's doing this work, we've dropped bombs on communities and bombed wedding groups that we thought were terrorist groups and killed civilians and created Taliban. And so I'm of the opinion that this is, Leonard, going to be the Vietnam, frankly, the Lyndon Johnson version of Vietnam. For whoever is the next president, is going to be Afghanistan, just like Iraq was for George W. Bush, just like as the occupation of any country that doesn't want to be occupied is for any president, or for that matter, I mean, go back to Algeria and the French, or Vietnam and the French, or, you know, on and on, India and the British. I mean, it's a country people don't want to be occupied. And this, I think that this whole Afghan situation is a disaster waiting to happen. We need to be going in there with aid. We need to help. I mean, this has turned into the major supplier of narcotics in the world, and we need to be assisting them in building the infrastructure necessary to have a civil society. When you do that, then they will not have an uncivil society. They will not tolerate the Taliban when you do that. I mean, just the locals will not tolerate. But when you start just going in and you say, well, we're going to have troops and bombs, and you know, it just doesn't work. It's not like the whole country declared war on us. It's not like World War II where the Germans all were bought into the Hitler cult and we're all, you know, it's not like that at all. It's a whole completely different thing. And the metaphors are all wrong. Back in the beginning, right after 9/11, when the Taliban, who, by the way, George Bush had given $40 million to in the beginning of his administration to not grow opium, and they didn't. They stopped the production of opium, and they destroyed a whole bunch of it. And you know, our friends, the Taliban, when they said, okay, if you will provide for an independent third country for a trial of Osama bin Laden to be held in, we'll hand him over to you if you can show us any evidence at all that he's involved in 9/11. Bush said, no thanks, we're just going to drop bombs on you. And I editorialized against our invading Afghanistan in the beginning. I don't think we ever should have in the first place. I could see, you know, going in and taking out the bin Laden training camps if you want, or negotiating with the Taliban, but bottom line, I mean, people say, for example, you know, why is it that Hamas and Hezbollah even exist? You know, why is it that these groups can get such a strong foothold that Hamas is able to throw out Fatah in the Gaza? Why is it that Hezbollah has such strength in southern Lebanon? Because they build schools and they build hospitals and they feed people and they run social security programs, essentially, you know, giving people, elderly people, pensions, and they make sure that people have food. It's that simple. We can do that, and we can do that at a fraction of the cost of dropping bombs on people. You can build 30 schools for the cost of one cruise missile. Anyhow, yeah, end of rant. Vernon in Oakland Park, Florida. Hey, Vernon.
Hey.
You're on the air.
Fine. How are you?
Good.
Good.
You need to turn down your radio.
Okay. Yes. I was just calling. I don't want to take much of your time, but just, I guess, for people to call, I got the direct line for Nancy Pelosi's office in the House of Representatives.
Sure.
Okay. That number is 202-225-4965.
4965. Great. You can also, people can, and thank you for that, Vernon. People can also go to callcongress.org. It's a page on our website. We put it up. And it lists all of the 800 numbers that we've been able to find that actually work. That'll get you into the Capitol Hill switchboard. And then they'll simply answer Capitol Hill or U.S. Congress or however they answer the phone. And you simply say, I'd like to speak with Speaker Pelosi's office, please. And that will get you through. So, yeah. Nancy in Portland, Oregon. Hey, Nancy.
Hi, Tom. A thousand thanks to you and Lorraine and your team. There have been a lot of...
That would be Louise and Sean.
What?
Louise and Sean are our team here.
Oh,
and,
okay.
And,
oh, I see. Okay.
And in New York, it's Marcus today, normally Lauren and Chris.
Okay. Well, thanks to them and you. You talked earlier when I called in. You've had a lot of compelling topics since then, but you mentioned how the Republicans are packaging their energy lies in such delicious, easily digested sound bites.
Oh, yeah, Newt Gingrich has this whole thing, you know, drill now, drill here, pay less. And it's wrong. It's based on a lie, but it really sounds good. And he's got 1.2 million signatures already in just a couple of weeks on petitions for this.
And the Dems' bulky messages are evaporating into thin air.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I was thinking a good PR windfall topic that Barack could highlight in powerful, succinct sound bites is that switching to homegrown green energy like wind, solar, waves, and so on would create thousands of desperately needed, good, high-paying jobs for Americans.
Yes, absolutely. And that was my point, and thank you, Nancy. That was my point in my proposed slogan, which is, you know, stop the addiction, rebuild a new America. And I you know, or some variation on the matter, you know, focus group the thing. I came up with that three and a half hours ago. I mean, it's just out of thin air. So there's a lot of different ways that it could be done. Bob in San Francisco. Hey, Bob.
Hi, Tom.
Yeah, what's up?
Your discussion of Fannie Mae, the bailout,
and how the Reagan people made a deal with the Japanese to save the dollar.
It was actually during the Carter administration.
Yeah, I thought maybe it was earlier, but it's the system.
Yeah.
Reagan ran the dollar down and used women to make our standard of living somewhat equal. He just conscripted them to the workforce. And this last decade has been stage two. They were conscripted into the shock troops of the bubble in real estate. They were all the buyers into the market. Yeah. And now they're the bag holders. And to the extent they're holding on to their mortgages and not walking, they are bailing out the dollar a second stage.
Yep. And they're doing it because it's not just throwing bad money after good. It's in the hopes that we can hold this thing together. The problem is that the structural support, actually it was done in the Gerry Ford administration, now that I think of it, because it was the early 70s. And thank you, Bob, for the call. But the bottom line is that since Reagan came into office, we have seen the complete deconstruction of all the structural stuff necessary to have an economy that works. So, you know, we don't have it. It ain't going to work. And, you know, we got a serious problem here in the United States. So, anyhow, don't forget, my friends. Oh, it's 45 minutes past the hour. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Visit HartmanRadio.com for live streaming video of the Tom Hartman Program.
Ellen, hey, a question for you before we get into the news of the day.
Go for it.
Okay. In September 13th and 14th in Andover, Massachusetts, there is a conference to discuss and lay plans for obtaining prosecutions of high-level U.S. war criminals. And I see that Peter Weiss, the vice president of the Center for Constitutional Rights, is going to be one of the speakers. I'm assuming this is something that your brother Michael, who's the director or the president of Center for Constitutional Rights, is involved with, or is CCR just speaking there?
No, I'm sure he's involved in it. I haven't talked to him because he took a week's vacation. He'll be back next Sunday. But I know that they've been very, very involved in this.
Okay, great. Because I want to follow up on this and give these guys a good plug. And this is so important. And they got a couple of people who we've talked to before, Ann Wright, Jordan Paust, others who are going to be speaking there as well. So, yeah.
Well, that's great news. Because I have no visual memory and probably wouldn't recognize my brother if I ran into him on the street, but our very own Jay Tamboli has eagle eyes and was in the Senate today, where Ted Stevens, it was mainly Republicans in the Senate, were kind of giving him nice little pats on the back, being very, very friendly to him. And then he was seen having a pretty long conversation with Larry Craig. That's your local color from those of us at Talk Radio News Service. A couple other interesting things happening. The president today made a remark at the Rose Garden. He was flanked by all members of the cabinet, and in fact, some of them have changed that several of us press people were remarking that we actually couldn't recognize all of them by sight anymore. But they were all there. And the president kept talking about drilling, saying that this essentially offshore oil resources are what's needed to be. He said that that restricted areas could eventually produce 18 billion barrels of oil. He said that's 10 years worth of Americans' current production, but not, of course, usage.
Right.
And he said it would take time, but the need for Congress to act is urgent. And he said that they're going on vacation, Congress, but they have not worked on.
See, this is totally political. This is Newt Gingrich's new 501 or 527, excuse me, and with their slogan, drill now, drill here, pay less. And he's already got over a million signatures on these petitions. They've apparently tested this. I'm trying to nail this down because I've gotten a couple of reports that they tested this in one county in Colorado where they actually, you know, kind of carpet bombed the local county or did highly targeted cable TV advertising to them and were able to flip the county from being largely pro-Obama to being largely pro-McCain with the single issue, drill now, drill here, pay less. And this is Bush, you know, giving cover to it. And this is going to be, you know, McCain running his campaign on these three talking points, win Iraq, drill oil, and lower taxes.
Right. And it was interesting today, they had, Steny Hoyer gave, his pen and pencil and he said, we're not against drilling. We're just against drilling in a lot of the places the Republicans want us to drill.
Right. Well, and the fact of the matter is that they have all kinds of leases already on oil that they could be drilling. But the problem is that without a response that can be reduced to a soundbite, Newt Gingrich is going to kick our butts. And that's why I've been suggesting all day long an alternative suggestion, an alternative group. We need to set up a 527. Some genius at the DNC needs to do this, or somebody associated with them. Do exactly the same thing that Newt Gingrich is doing, only call it Stop the Addiction, Rebuild a New America, or Build a New America, or Rebuild America. Stop the Addiction, Rebuild America, and have it be a clean energy initiative. Get T. Boone Pickens to endorse part of it, although I don't know if he'd go along with the Stop the Addiction part, but I think he would. And he was on the show, you know, a day or two ago, and going off on this stuff. And let's take them on where they live, you know. But I don't think that the Democrats are good enough at messaging to figure that out.
I don't think the Democrats are where they should be on that one. A couple other interesting things. The president today, as he walked in the Oval Office about 7:30 this morning, he did sign the housing bill. Dana Perino said that he is completely, against many provisions in it, but felt that because of the necessary steps the Treasury needed to take, they wanted to do that. There is $10.6 trillion deficit ceiling in there. There's a lot of stuff in there. Let's put it that way. It's a little more complicated than we think. And one of the things that apparently is in there, is it in the housing bill? Jay just gave it to me. One of the things is that they have made a deal that there is, and the new IRS rules that are part of this, and yes, it's part of the housing bill, that will require PayPal and other processors of online payments to report annual gross receipts to the IRC, to the IRS for anybody who does over $10,000 of business a year, or has more than 200 transactions in a given year.
So part of the housing bailout bill for the Fannie Mae Freddie Mac bailout bill is that they get to snoop on us more vigorously on our financial transactions.
That's right.
That's incredible. I'm not surprised, but that's incredible. Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com. Thank you, Ellen.
Thank you.
Coming up tomorrow, Dr. James Carafano of the Heritage Foundation on why America's anti-war movement is, in his words, wilting. Is it? Plus, investigative journalist and one of my favorite people, Larissa Alexandrovna of Raw Story, is going to be here to talk about the latest developments in both the Don Siegelman and the Paul Miner case. And, of course, the best of the rest of the news and your calls. Right here on the Tom Hartman Program, your radio support group for We the People. Don't forget, democracy begins with you. Call Nancy Pelosi now. Tag, you're it.
This is the Tom Hartman Program. For exclusive audio archives and more information, visit HartmanRadio.com.